And good afternoon, Scott Spears back with you for hour number two today, Thursday, September the 27th, 2018, 14 coming up on 15 minutes past the hour. Today we are spending the day with Jim Albright, the last guard out of Alcatraz Prison, who will be at Harding High School tonight at 7 p.m. for a free presentation, absolutely free, 7 p.m. Harding High School, right here on Route 309 Harding Highway in Marion, 7 p.m. September 27th. Don't miss it. It's going to be very interesting. Pictures and stories, and Jim will have his book on sale. It's going to be something. And this event today, radio, is supported by Sansoda's Fresh Italian, 1292 Delaware Avenue. Telephone number 740-751-6596. Jim, before we went to break, I wanted to tease the audience that we were going to talk about why Alcatraz closed. Why did it close?
Well, a couple of reasons. It kind of outlived its usefulness. It was built for the gangster area back when the gangsters were running wild. And it was a place to put them and keep them and keep them away from the public, out of the public eye. The cost out there, I don't remember the exact figures, but at that time, while I was there, it cost roughly $5 per day per inmate to keep the inmates on a land-based prison. At that time, it cost $15 per inmate per day to keep them on an island, and that's because everything that come over there, even our drinking water, had to be barged over. And the salt air eats everything up so bad. 2 years ago when we were out there, they had a false wall in the dining room that was just loaded with different pictures for the tourists to go over and look at, but it kept them away. It was about 4 foot from the regular wall, and it kept them away from the outside wall because it was crumbling from the salt air. And they just spent something like $40 million to rebuild that wall. And now it's open again to the public and everything. And, of course, what goes through my mind when I was there, I remember being outside that wall many, many times because we had a gun gallery out there. And you would go arm yourself and go over and be in that gun gallery during the meals in case something happened, that you could protect the officers in there. And they had a box hanging on the wall when you went in there, a little metal box. And the first thing you did, you unlocked it and opened it, and there was 5 buttons in that box. And the first button was to press to alarm the control center that there was trouble in the dining room. The other 4 buttons was for 4 different sections in the dining room to release tear gas.
Mm. Did any of those events ever have to happen while you were there?
No.
Why do you think that was?
I think it was a change of inmate. They were a different type of inmate. As I said in the past, I think our inmates at Alcatraz were like professional convicts. And they didn't do all the stupid stuff that the inmates do now, you know. And they didn't go for petty stuff. It was part of the game. I'm a crook and you're a cop. You know, I go do my thing. And if you catch me, I go do my time. I do a crime, I do a time. And when my time is up, and if I want to go do it again, that's up to me.
How much time was there from the time you got the word that it was closing until it actually closed?
Oh, 6-7 months, I would guess. They couldn't. It might have been a little longer than that. It might have been 9 months. They couldn't keep it from us, especially. I'm working the clothing room, and they would have to call me and send me a list. Here's the guys that are going on this chain or being transferred to another prison, and you got to get their clothes ready for them. You know, so some secrets are pretty hard to keep.
What were the last days that it was open with prisoners like? How many were left?
Our very last chain was 27. And our normal chain would be taken out of the basement of the clothing room. They'd go out and get on the bus and go down to the dock and et cetera, et cetera. The last 27, we got them down there and chained them up and dressing them out. And we took them back, right back upstairs, down the main corridor of the cell house and right out the front door. And I have pictures of myself escorting the inmates right out the front door. I'm right out in front of the building with the inmates.
Did the people at the time have an idea that this was going to be a big thing? Because there had been movies before it had closed.
I think it became bigger than they ever expected. And I think it's still bigger today than they expected.
Yeah. Do you think there'll ever be a time that it is not regarded the way it is?
I'm sure that it'll die down as time goes on. Two or three kids I was over at our daughter's 20-some years ago now, and they farm, and they had a couple of trailer parks, and the kids that work for them, I stepped in, and their son-in-law says, you guys know that Poppy, oh, he called me Poppy, he said, you know that Pop worked at Alcatraz. They said, oh, what's Alcatraz? They had no idea. And that is going to get worse as time goes by. You'll have your history buffs that will still embrace it, but maybe they teach more history overseas, but most of the people that come while we're out there are from overseas.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many foreigners that come and go through that place. It's just unbelievable.
Where did most of the prisoners go as the place was closing?
Well, they depend on how much time they had, what kind of sentence they had. They tried to send everybody to a prison somewhere close to their home, but the majority of them went to McNeil Island, Washington, Leavenworth, Kansas, and Atlanta, Georgia.
Now, when you look back on those years, is it a good reflection, the time you were there, a happy time?
Yes. Yeah.
Now, a lot of people would think that'd be strange.
Yeah, no, we really enjoyed it there. I mean, nice people that we worked with, you visited back and forth, and help you in a flat minute. Just like I said, that we would go to the Safeway store right out in front of Fort Mason, buy our groceries, and you could have five or six sacks of groceries. And so you'd drive back in, and you'd drive over toward a boat dock, and you'd set your groceries out, and then you'd go to park your car. And you come back to pick up your groceries, go down on the boat. They may not be there. The people that lived there that were getting on the boat would pick up and carry them down, put them on the boat for you. And same way when you hit the dock on the island, they'd grab a bag or two of groceries and carry them over and put them on the bus.
When the prison was open, were you allowed to have family come visit you on the island?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what was the impression as people came and visited?
Well, some of them were fearful to come, and other ones, like my brother, he couldn't wait to get there and go through the prison, you know. Of course, he was a police officer in Des Moines, and so they didn't hesitate to let him through, and he went through there and very impressed with the place. Her folks, some of the stuff that we didn't carry out with us when we moved there, they brought to us later. And I told her, I says, they might beat us out there. And, of course, my folks was out, and brothers and sisters were out. Yeah.
For people who watch the movies, how close is that, not necessarily the people who are depicted in the movies, but how close is it to the prison itself?
As I've told people before, the Clint Eastwood movie, Escape from Alcatraz, That is probably the most realistic one that I have seen. That's closer than any of I've seen to the way it happened, how it happened, actually what happened. There's a few things that can't be, but it had to be for the movie.
For people who don't remember that movie, that was a detail of a specific event.
Yes.
Yeah. Remind people what the event was.
It was the 1962 June 12th escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood playing the part of Frank Morse and then John and Clarence Anglin.
Now, the way the movie ended, do you think that would be a possibility?
Possible.
Possible.
Not probable, but possible.
But possible.
Because you only got like a half hour in that water, and then your senses start shutting down. And once you can't think and you can't get your arms and legs to move the way you want, then it gets worse from there. You know, another 10 minutes and you're done.
Another place that Alcatraz shows up a lot is on these ghost shows, that it's haunted. Would you ever buy into any of that?
No, I've been everywhere on that island every hour of the day, and I've never seen anything that made me think of a ghost. I know that one of the inmates, that even showed on a movie, that he thought he was out there visiting. This is after he got out. And he thought he seen somebody at the other end of the cell house. And by the time he run down there, that image was gone. And I say that if you believe in ghosts, there's ghosts there. If you don't believe in them, there is no ghost there.
You know, a lot of people here in Ohio visit the Mansfield Reformatory. It's open for Halloween. It's a scary place to go. For people who might want to or who have visited Alcatraz now, would you consider it a scary place?
No. No, they had the ghost hunters out there. I've seen a documentary, and they had them out there. And they was hearing noises that I didn't hear, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've been through what you're talking about up here at Mansfield, where they filmed the Shawshank Redemption. We belonged to Scooter Club, and we was up here one year for our meet, and we went over there and we toured that facility. And it's kind of neat to note that when they filmed, in the walls are all peeling, all the paint's peeling off, and it's all shabby and looks bad. The walls in the warden's office, when they showed the warden there, the back wall and part of the ceiling and part of the side walls are all cleaned and painted. The rest of it's still shabby. But that's all it was going to show in the shot in the movie.
That's right. Movies kind of take their own license to do what they want to do. Jim, you did end up writing a book, and you'll have some on sale tonight. Why'd you decide to write the book?
Pressure. my wife and kids and brothers and sisters is all pressuring me to, you know, you got to write something down, you know. You got all these stories and they're not going to be here. So I really ended up writing it for the kids and the grandkids so they'd know what Dad and Grandpa did. And it took about 10 years to get it written down, you know, to get it to... she used to be on me, and I'd say, well, I didn't do things that other people didn't do. And she says, well, they didn't write them down.
Yeah. So. What is your favorite part of the book? Do you have a favorite section?
Oh, I've got a list of inmates in there and tell a little bit about them. That might be. The picture that shows me escorting the last inmate off the island, that's kind of neat, you know. And I have a list of the inmates when I was there, of the crimes they committed and how many had committed them crimes, and the total number of years they're doing minus the lifers.
Are there still some people who were there who are alive in prison somewhere else? Or do you know?
Yeah, there's two of them that I know of. Yeah, There's a guy, his number was 1414, Frank Sprintz. He was called the Flying Bandit. He used to go maybe rob a bank, and he'd make it to a little airport. He'd still want to steal a small plane and use it for his getaway. He didn't know how to fly. And he wrecked two or three planes. He's lucky he never got killed, you know. But I had heard, maybe a year or two ago, somebody told me that he's locked back up again somewhere. And when we were transferring the inmates out, we were on the airplane, and I was around checking the irons to make sure they're supposed to, you know, like still locked like they should be. And one of the inmates, when I was checking him, he says, Mr. Albright, and Sprintz was on that plane, the Flying Bandit, and said, Mr. Albright, he says, you tell a pilot if he gets in trouble, Frank will fly it for you. And the other one is James Whitey Bulger.
Oh, yeah.
And he was on the run for 16 years, and they caught him in, I don't know, Santa Barbara, I believe, somewhere in Southern California. And they indicted him for 19 murders and found him guilty of 11 of them. And he's in, I think, either Massachusetts, somewhere up in there.
Somewhere.
He'll never get out. You know, he's done.
What did you make of him?
He was one of the kind that would kind of follow his nose, you know. I mean, he kind of paying attention to where he's going and not paying attention to what's around him, but he knows what's around him, you know. And he would speak, and he'd be kind and pleasant, but he didn't go out of his way to talk to you. But if you ask him something, he'd answer back.
Now, Alcatraz closed in 64, was it?
Three.
63. And we talked about this in hour number one, but Robert Stroud, the Birdman of Alcatraz, that movie actually came out while the prison was still open. 1962, that movie came out. Were people aware? Was he aware? Were you aware that this was being done, this film?
No, not really.
It became a popular film.
Yeah.
For some reason.
I don't ever remember any camera crew. I don't remember Burt Lancaster, you know. And I would have had to seen him, you know. Yeah. I would have had to know about it, and I just don't know about it at all. So I just wonder if that's a mistake on the year.
It could be.
Well, but he was transferred to another penitentiary, so wouldn't the reporters and stuff been there? Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
Could have been. But he, if for people who may have just tuned in, he was not the nicest of guys.
That's being polite.
Yeah, but the movie treats him a little differently.
Yes.
Yeah. When you saw the movie, having known the man, what was your thought?
Phony movie. It's like the fake news.
there's some of that too. That's going around. When you wrote the book, who are some of the inmates that you remember who maybe were not so well known that stick out in your mind?
Well, the first one that pops in my mind, why I don't know, but Danny Maness was my clerk in the clothing room. And you talk about the inmate grapevine, this guy was on it. Because we had to dress out the inmates, so we had to have their clothes ready and make sure that, you know, we had nice clothes for them. And you had to know who was going so you could get them clothes ready. So he would always, a couple of weeks before the chain is going to leave, he'd come up and give me a list of inmates that are going to be on that chain. I say, Danny, now are you sure of this? Yeah, these are the ones that are going. You know, and I went on five chains, and every one was right on them lists he gave me. All five lists were just like they should be, except one inmate. And one inmate was typed in, and then he was crossed off, and another inmate penciled in. And he went to Marion, and I run into him at Marion after I had transferred there. I said, "Hey, Danny," I said, "what'd you do on that list? You had a goof up, you know." And he says, "Mr. Albright," he says, "that was right. They changed him at the last minute." Yeah. Now, how in the heck do they find out?
What's your
and
best
I
guess?
I would go to the captain's office and ask, and I couldn't get the list. It isn't ready yet. We don't know yet, you know.
Do you have any guesses on how he got the the information?
I don't know, because there was no inmates working out front. You know, if there was an inmate working out front, I could have seen it, but not without an inmate out there, you know.
Was the prison, when it was in use, was it kept up well?
Very, very well. You could eat off the floors. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just like an army base, just immaculate.
You know, I think about the time you were there, it's kind of interesting because the 60s, early 60s, there's the assassination of President Kennedy, Cuban Missile Crisis. Was there any feeling about any of this while at the prison?
These guys were crooks. They were bad guys, but they were very patriotic.
Really?
Yeah, very patriotic. Mm. Yeah, it kind of surprised me, you know.
Yeah. Were there people there who declared their innocence?
I think we might have had one guy who did not.
Everybody else was innocent.
Everybody else was innocent. Anything that happened, it was somebody else's fault, and I didn't do that, you know. And I was talking to one guy one day, and he was innocent. He didn't do the crime they got him for. And I said, "Well, what if they got you for every crime that you did that they didn't catch you for?" "Oh, hell, I'd never get out."
Did you know who had done what, who the murderers were, who the bank robbers were?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And do you steer clear of the murderers a little more than maybe the other people?
No, not really. No. You could go read anybody's file anytime you wanted, you know, if you got a crew of men to go do something, to work on something, a lot of people would go read their files. I didn't make that a point. You know, unless there was something specific or somebody told me something, then I might read it. But other than that, I didn't do it. I would, you know, "What are you doing here? How's come you're here?" You know, and they would tell you.
Did you ever have a time where you thought, "I don't want to be here anymore," while it was open?
No, I didn't. No. I got at the end of my 26 years, I got to the point where they offered me a promotion. They said, "You know, we'll send you to New York. You can be associate warden up there." I said, "No, I've had enough. I don't want any more."
Where did you go from Alcatraz?
To Marion.
To Marion,
Illinois.
What were the differences?
Well, the difference being Alcatraz was our maximum at the time. When I went to Marion, I'm there from midnight till 6 in the morning with 212 inmates, and I can't lock a door. The doors are up, but there's no keyways in them, so I didn't even carry keys. I had a phone, but there's nobody on the reservation to call. You know, so how do I take account? You know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd go out in the yard and yell count, and I'd give them 15 minutes to get in and get back in their cells, you know, and then I'd go take a count, and I'd put a question mark on the count, because I didn't know if they was covering for each other, you know, when I was at one end of the cell house and on the other side of the cell block. You know, how do I know?
So at that point, in the prison in Illinois, they were just allowed to be out any time of the day.
Well, there's no way you could keep them in if you can't lock them, you know.
Yeah. So what are the differences between a maximum security and a lesser security, minimum security prison?
Well, most of the minimums are camps, and they could actually walk off from the camp any time they wanted. You know, they're out working the grounds all day and everything, and they had a kid at Marion, or excuse me, at Terre Haute, when I was there, and he was inside. He was, you know, in medium custody. and he was getting very short. And they put him out on the camp, and he had like 30 days left, and he'd be released. So he started running off every night. Every night he'd go to town, he'd steal stuff, and he'd stash it here. And he had a whole big stash of stuff when they caught him. He was getting ready for when he got out.
It's interesting because I guess it's a fear of being caught that keeps him there.
Yeah.
Were there, when you were in Illinois, were there ever any escape attempts?
Yeah. Yeah, I went on a middle of the night attempt there. Yeah.
Was there ever at Alcatraz a time where you felt in danger for your personal well-being?
No, I think he was on your toes at times a little more than others, but I wasn't fearful of it.
You talked a little bit about riots earlier on. What were you a part of? Did you see there?
Well, I did that at Alcatraz. I did it at Marion. I did it at Petersburg. I did it at Terre Haute. Every place has had an attempted riot or uprising, if that's what you want to call it, on a smaller scale. And there you're just being alert and a show of force and things like that.
Was the administration at Alcatraz good, or was it did it change a lot?
Yeah, throughout the years it changed. I mean, it was a lot stricter by the ones that were before me. I didn't work for them, but the ones that were before me were much stricter. Our Paul Madigan was the warden when I went there, and right at the end, before he got ready to retire or leave, whatever he did, and before O.J. Blackwell came, when they went through the metal detector, you could set it pretty fine. Because at that time, all the inmates wore wooden belt buckles, and they had wooden nails in their shoes. So you could set a lot finer to pick up metal objects. And he changed that, let them wear nails in their shoes and metal belt buckles. That made it a lot harder on us then. Yeah.
Was there ever a bad administration, in your opinion?
The only time I'd say that you call it bad would maybe R.J. Willard. He was the warden after it closed, really. He was just there for the closing. And he just kind of didn't have any idea what was going on, and he wasn't warden material. I think he just was sent there to close it, you know.
As you were the last guard out, what were the days like when there were no prisoners left?
Long.
Yeah. What would you do?
Well, they other prisons in the area, the federal prisons, came up and got stuff that they might want. Like in the control room right now, I think there's one piece of bulletproof glass. The rest of it's all taken and used somewhere else. And there's one piece that wasn't called for or something. And they took the boat radio and the telephone, and they moved it into the visiting room right next door to the control room, because they was going to be scavenging stuff out of the control room. And, of course, you didn't have to worry about keys because nothing's locked anymore, you know, and you didn't have to worry about phone calls that much other than island residents, you know, because there's nobody in there. But you sit there, and the warden told me, he says, now, if you want to bring magazines to read, you know, while you're doing this, he says, while you're waiting, you know, with the boat and things like that, he said, you know, where before there was no reading on duty unless it was post orders.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. And as far as the prison goes, what are the major differences today than when you were there?
Convicts.
Yeah, like a convicts now.
It's the convicts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they give it an essence when you were, because we'll never be there when there were convicts there.
Yeah, but there's a self-guided tour. They have the earphones like you got on. And they have a little player, and you hit the button, and it'll tell you where to go, and it'll tell you all about what happened here and there. And I, as the people come in the bookstore, that's where the tour ends. And they come in, and I tell them, you know, you can come in and see me and ask questions, whether you buy a book or not. And they will come in, and I will ask them, did you like the tour? And there has been one person that did not like the tour, and that was a little boy. And the mother said he was just scared to death in there. I had to get him out. Mm-hmm. But everybody else just praises it, you know, and especially the self-guided tour.
What kind of things did you keep from the prison, the island?
Oh, I got the key to the main gate. I got my... original ID card. I've got a picture of me escorting the last inmate off the island. I got my plaque with the key mounted to it and my 5, 10, 15, 20, and 25-year pins mounted on it. I've got a cop-out, as we called it. It was a report to a staff member, and they called them cop-outs. And an inmate writing me up for not giving him a blanket, you know, and you know, things like that.
You got your hat.
Yeah, I got my original hat.
Did the when you talk to the prisoners who are still alive, who you've went back for with these reunions, have you ever learned anything that you didn't know at the time?
No, we don't talk too much about that, you know. Yeah, they. I feel that I don't want to remind them and try and make them relive their prison experience. So, you know, I heard you got married now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
That's what it is. Small talk.
Yeah.
Small talk. It's, you keep going back. Do you ever see a time when you wouldn't want to go back?
No, I don't see a time when I wouldn't want to, but I already see a time when I'm not going to, and I think that's right now.
Now, what is that?
Because we had, I think, this year was, I think, our last reunion. They're saying that, you know, it was for three people, really. You know, and one guy lives right there in San Francisco. They're saying that it's kind of bad to spend all that money for three people. And then I had a couple guys tell me we might have a smaller one, you know, and just a hand pick who's going to come. So I don't know what's going to happen. The reunions as we knew them are over now.
When the reunion started, who did you like seeing that you did not see a whole lot of in day-to-day life when they were bigger and people were alive?
Pat Mahoney is one of them. His boy and our boy played together. She used to babysit his boy. And he was a guard there, and then he worked for the mechanical service, and they redone all the buildings and painted them and everything. That was while I was there. That was done then. And then he became our boat operator. And he couldn't come this year, because he had fell and broke his ankle, and he's got more metal in the ankle than he does bone. I mean, his son showed us a picture of it, and it's nasty. And he's getting to the point where that's it. He won't never be able to be back. And I'm just estimating there's 6 to 8 officers and 6 to 8 inmates left that were there. And, of course, we know two of them are never going to be back because they're locked up. Yeah. And some of them are in wheelchairs. I know of two officers that are in wheelchairs, so you know they're not coming back. The one came back even though he was in the wheelchair, and I think it was too tough. I don't think he'll be back.
Knowing that this might have been your last time, was it sentimental there, being there this last time?
Yeah, it was very sad. Yeah. In fact, I wrote a letter for our newsletter that it will be coming out probably next month that, you know, I felt real bad about it.
Yeah. Is it... Did people ever stay in touch with you? Did prisoners stay in touch? I know they write, they call sometimes people.
Not really. Not much. We've had two or three throughout the years. We had one that worked for me at Terre Haute. And in the meantime, I get transferred to Milan, Michigan. And he does the rest of his little time there, and he gets out. And he starts writing me letters and sending me pictures of... He was a truck driver, and he'd show me what he's doing to his truck and how he's fixing it up, you know, personalizing it. And here's what I'm doing to my house, and send pictures. And we'd hear from him just every once in a while. And then one time we hear from him that him and his wife are going to be up in our area and they'll come and see us. That's great. We'll go out to dinner together, you know. And we went out to dinner together, and he showed me the latest pictures, and we talked and all that. And then time goes by, and we don't hear from Red, and we don't hear from him, and we don't hear from him. And she said, you know, we haven't heard from Red in a long time. Wonder what's up. I says, he's locked up again.
Yeah. You know, we talked about the movies, and we talked about the memories, but a lot of people, some of the inmates there, have written books as well. Do you read other people's stuff?
Yeah.
What do you think when you... Is it mostly accurate?
Some of them are pretty close, but some of them you can read that little click into it, you know, that I can still outsmart the other guy,
yeah.
You know, one of that. And I think I told Charlie earlier today that a lady, we was out signing books, and a lady come up and wanted an inmate book. And she had one with written by Whitey Thompson, whom Whitey had signed one and give it to me, you know, when I met him out there years ago. And she had two kids with her. And I said, I don't think you want that book. I says, you know, take that one over there. I said, that's the inmate's book, and that would be better for the kids. Because I says, if you take the curse words and the sex out of Whitey's book, it might be 290 pages, but it could be in 4 pages then if you take that out.
Do you believe the books, or is there that still...
No,
that
it's far-fetched, yeah. You know. I mean, it's like I'm a hero, you know. And that's why some of them would come back to the island for our reunions, because they feel like they're a hero by coming back.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Alcatraz, and I don't know if there's any other prisons that have this, but there are, I mean, if it was prison, people who did bad things went there, but now they make money off the fact that they were there, off books and some people movies and some people personal appearances and put up in hotels and lectures. And do you have any mixed feelings about that from the inmate side?
Well, the thing is, it's like Baker, he's the latest one now, and he claims he makes more money selling books than the president makes, you know. Well, I find that a little hard to believe, but they stretch everything. That's braggarts. There again, that's what I'm saying about the three escapees. They'd have to brag, you know, everybody has to brag. And Baker will tell about, he was robbing a bank or whatever, and he got into Alcatraz, and he met, what's his name, and I won't mention the name, but he was a counterfeiter, and he taught me how to counterfeit. Baker, what are you talking about? He's in prison, too. Mm. You know, he's locked up, too, and he'd taken you. And of course, Baker went out and started trying to counterfeit, and he got locked up again, you know.
Well,
but, so but it, they got that little quirk where they can beat the system.
You know, there were a couple other here in the last 5 minutes we have. I don't know if you were there when they were there, but a lot of people talk about, I guess the only one we haven't talked about is Bumpy Johnson.
Oh, Ellsworth Bumpy Johnson.
Yeah. Was he there when you were there?
Yes, I brought him there.
What was his story, for people who don't remember?
Okay, Bumpy had been there before, and he got out, and he was the Al Capone of Harlem. He run Harlem. And the training officer come and got me one day. Now, I've only been there like 2.5 weeks. And he says, Jim, he says, we're going over to Oakland and meet a train and pick up a chain of inmates. You know, brand new. And so we go over and we borrow a sheriff's van. And he says, you drive. I didn't know where the train station was at in Oakland. I didn't even know where Oakland was, you know. But he told me the directions, and we get over there, and we meet the train, and we pick up, I think it was 5 inmates, Bumpy and 4 others. And so the training officer says, tell you what, Jim, you drove over, so you getting back with the inmates, and I'll drive back. I said, oh, boy, you know. So I get back with the inmates, and Bumpy was a comical guy. And he's laying it on real heavy because these other inmates have never been there. And he's really telling them what they're going to do at Alcatraz and how they're going to be treated and, I mean, on and on and on. Really laying it on. And so we get over there and get them dressed in, sign cells and everything. And about 2 weeks later, I go out in the yard, and there's Bumpy sitting on the top step of the bleachers. And I thought, well, I'll go and talk to him, say hi. And so I go over there, and we're talking, and he says, Mr. Albright, he says, remember you come to Oakland and picked me up? I said, yeah. He says, you know, I had the mother inmates scared to death. And I said, yes, and me right along with him. And me and him got along real good after that, you know. He respected me for letting him know.
So he was a mafia guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was black mafia.
When you think of somebody like Bumpy, who was there, mafia guy, Al Capone of Harlem, and you had a jovial relationship with him, do you think, was he a guy you could say, well, what did you do to get in here, so on and so forth?
Oh, yeah, you could tell him, and, you know, ask him, and he'd tell you. But the thing was, you always knew in the back of your mind, if you're in the way, he's going to kill you or have you killed. You know,
did people like he, because he was obviously there when you were there, did they have any kind of, for
yes.
lack of a power over?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, he'd sit on that top step, and there'd be a couple henchmen way down at the bottom of the step, and nobody approached him. None of the convicts approached him unless he okayed it. You know, he'd nod to them, and then they'd let him go by them. Yeah.
And how did the guards feel about that?
Well, we just walked up to him, you know, like I did. I just walked up to him, no problem whatsoever, you know. But he was controlling the black inmates, actually.
What was his exit like? Was he there till it closed, or did he leave before?
No, he was there or gone from there before the last chain, yeah. I've got a list at home. I've got
That's
a list of everybody that was on every chain, and
well, I do want to remember, we got 2 minutes left here, and we thank Jim and his wife, Kathy, certainly for coming in today and being on the radio with us. And you don't want to miss this tonight, because this is certainly something once in a lifetime. There aren't too many people left who were at this most famous prison, Alcatraz, certainly not the last guard who walked out. We'll be giving a presentation, Jim Albright, tonight, 7 p.m., Marion Harding High School, Route 309 here in Marion. And the best part is it's absolutely free. Bring as many people as you want. It is free. And the presentation will be pictures, which you did not, obviously, on radio today, get a piece of. So that'll be very nice. And also questions and things of that nature. And again, this broadcast has been supported today by Sansoda Fresh Italian, address 1292 Delaware Avenue, telephone number 740-751-6596. With a minute left, Jim, when people are thinking of going out tonight, which I'm sure they are, what kind of mindset would you have them come questioning, interest? Because everybody knows the name Alcatraz. If nothing else, they know the name.
They might see the family, you know, to get an idea. That most people think it was just a big rock with convicts on it. They don't realize there was, like, we had 67 families lived there. And they would never dream that, you know. We went bowling there. We went and played ping pong and pool there. Nobody would dream that, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting. And again, your book will be on sale. How much is a copy of the
$20.
Book? $20. $20 for a copy of the book.
That includes tax.
And that's tax. All right. So that includes that. And the book is Last Guard Out.
Correct.
Yep. That's the title of the book. It's a first-hand account. And it took a year to write the book.
Ten years.
Why do you think it took so long?
First place, I didn't want to write it. And then after I was convinced, too, it just seemed like I couldn't get this right and I couldn't get that right. And it didn't come out the way I thought it should. You know?
Is everything still clear in your mind from those days?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Something you never forget.
Something he knows more about stuff than I ever dreamed of.
It's so interesting, and like I say, it truly is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, because what an insight Jim Albright has to Alcatraz. Jim, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome,
thank
sir.
You.
And Kathy, thank you as well, and I will see you both tonight. Remember, 7 p.m., Harding High School, absolutely free. Jim Albright, the last guard out of Alcatraz. Have a great day. Talk with you tomorrow.
WWGH 107.1 .com.
Programming on WWGH